You know what we'll start with right now? And that'll kind of lead into my little bit of teaching time. Yeah. Jared, do we got the video loaded? Or did you? Go ahead and speak out, son. I can't hear you. Hi, Joel. Is it not loaded? It's not loaded. Give it a couple of minutes. It's ready? All right, cool. All right, so what I want to talk about a little bit is prayer. In my own, and you've heard me talk about this before, I struggle with prayer. And say this, and this might shock you, but I think you have to let me explain myself. I'm really not even sure if I believe in prayer. And that is a part of the dilemma. Because some people get very, oh yeah, I believe in prayer, because they've had prayers answered. And I get that. That's almost like, you know, it's like making predictions and then, you know, having 1 out of 10 come true and then saying, see, that person is clairvoyant. I've prayed through 27 years of ministry through all kinds of things for all kinds of people in all kinds of situations. And there have been times where I feel like, oh my God, that was a direct answer to prayer. And other times, like, how could this not be answered? How could I be interceding? How could so many people be interceding on behalf of a child who is going through this horrific thing and it is silent? That's tough, man. It's tough. And I'm very careful with that now. It's not because I'm not exuberant. It's just like sometimes I hear people like, God really came through, you know, and God really delivered. And I understand the exuberance. I mean, I get that. But I also, the way I'm wired, I begin to think of all the ears that hear that. Yeah, but that didn't happen for me. And that can be bitterness. That can really, you know, and it can be like this, oh, well, God was awake apparently when you prayed, but he was snoozing when I needed those prayers for my kids. And that's a very painful thing. So I just want to say, first of all, prayer is mysterious. When I say I don't believe in prayer, are you asking me, do I pray? All the time. 24/7. I am in a constant dialogue in my head with God. And this means that a lot of that dialogue isn't very pleasant. A lot of times, I'm blasting God. I'm questioning him. And you know what? I think, T-H-I-N-K, this is IMO, in my opinion. Anything I ever say here is just mine. Worth anything more than that. But I think God prefers that. I think he prefers raw, honest questions. I think even sometimes when I question God, he would be like, yeah, so glad you brought that up. How come more people don't? How come more people aren't questioning about that? Very recently, I was about to go like, so funny, have this big thing that's happening. A good thing, a good big thing that has a good big potential thing. Very recently. And all of a sudden, I feel my, you know, I talk to other people, I'm like, hey man, you need to pray for this. You know, and all of a sudden, because it's a big, good thing for me, us, whatever, I'm thinking like, oh, yeah, yeah, we got to get the prayer on there. But with my nose to the grindstone in the world, with everything that I deal with, I know that I've been praying earnestly and pinpoint for Gaza and what's happening there in Israel. Right? And for these last 19, 20 days, been watching there as over 6,000, 7,000 casualties have taken place in Gaza. 7,000 casualties in the military incursion into Gaza. And over 1,000 deaths, and many of them, and I see the footage and I see the reels, are just children being obliterated by shelling, by bombs, by F-16 strikes, by naval guns, by phosphorus rockets that burn 1,500 degrees shrapnel into bodies and bury themselves. And I'm watching the footage there, and I, like so many others, are praying. And I don't see anything happening, man. And I'm not saying I'm just praying for the, I'm praying for Israel, I'm praying for the Mid, I'm praying for there. And yet you look at the numbers and it's sometimes it's just overwhelming. There's been 42 Israeli deaths, and I don't want to minimize one, because if it was my son or my dad or my brother or my sister, you know, in the case of the 42 deaths, 40 of them are military. 40 of the deaths are military deaths that have taken place in the actual assault. There have been 2 civilian deaths. Of the over 6,000, almost 7,000 casualties in Gaza, the vast, vast, vast majority of them are civilians. They're men, women, children who have nothing to do with the geopolitics and the conflict that has taken place, and they're being obliterated, and it's horrific. And I can't help, for me, when I go to God to pray for this thing that's a really good thing that I'd really like to happen for us, I can't help but begin to utter that prayer and just go like, ah, forget about it. It's just, compared to that stuff, I mean, seriously, if this is an order list, right, you can snuff the rug. Get the frickin' Gaza God and do something, damn it. And my prayers become just kind of stupid to me. And that doesn't mean they are. I'm just talking about what's taking place between my ears and my grinding brain, you know, when I begin to talk about, you know, and I get angry and I get edgy and I get mad because I'm aware of suffering. I'm looking ballistic sometimes when I'm flipping channels and I see these pompous TV preachers and their miracle crusades and all that crap, and I'm wondering, why the hell aren't you walking down, you know, the halls of Children's Hospital? Why aren't you going down Children's Hospital and healing kids there if you got all this anointing of God, you know? Bunch of frauds. And I think of what the people see when they see that stuff, that these people are getting, other earnest people are praying out to God, and they're getting nothing. So I think theologically there's a big wrong thing going on with prayer. So I want to just look at a little Numa video that addresses prayer. I'm not here to answer anything. If you're wondering, like, well, you know, maybe you're thinking like, sheesh, I don't want Pastor Paul praying for me. And, you know, maybe just, man, that's a, you know, limp faith there, you know. And maybe you're right, you know. It's weird. Maybe you don't want me praying for you. I don't know. One of the biggest prayers I ever had answered was my brother-in-law's terminal brain cancer. But the truth is, I was so angry, I just couldn't. He was given terminal brain cancer, and I would have like my best friend Mikey, who didn't even go to church. He's like, dude, you got to pray for him. I'm like, dude, what for? Well, wait a minute, you're the pastor, and you should be like, ugh, he's done. Like, he's done. I've done that, Mike. Mike, I've prayed for people like you can't believe. I've anointed them. I've prayed. I've done it with the elders. I've done it with groups. I've done it with everybody. Watch them die in front of my eyes. And now it's my brother-in-law. Screw it. I ain't praying for that. And miraculously, he gets healed. The one in a million. And I didn't pray for him. So maybe that's my gift. Come to me, and I'll not pray for you. Jared, thank you, buddy, for getting that running. Why don't you go ahead and play that and dim the lights, and we'll listen to Rob Bell for a moment. Dismiss you.
is that about Rob about bangs it out of the park on that one. But let me leave you with a few things, regurgitate a couple of few things about prayer. And maybe you can take this into your own prayer life. That scene that Rob is talking about where Jesus, it's the night of his arrest. They had just celebrated the Pesach, the Passover, and they retreated to a place called Gethsemane. You say like Gethsemane. Gethsemane means the place of the olive press, and it's an olive road that is in the Kidron Valley on the east side of Jerusalem. And he retreats there after the Passover meal, and he asks his disciples to keep watch. And then he retreats about a stone's throw from his disciples, and he begins to pray. And the gospel writers give us some intimate details. He begins to pray, and it says that he is deeply in anguish. He is clawing the ground. He is crying. There is snot coming out of his nose. He is just overwhelmed, it says. Overwhelmed, literally like a 50-foot wave crushing him with sorrow and grief. He's frightened, and he's pounding the ground. And it even is brought out by Luke that he begins to perspire, sweat blood. And that's actually a condition that can actually occur. Heavy weightlifters will often have that happen. I remember this one huge powerlifting champion in this one article I read in like fitness magazine, and he was talking about when he goes for the big, heavy deadlifts, he just begins, it takes everything, and literally tears of blood will begin to stream from his eyes. He'll sweat blood. And because of the weight and the force, and it describes that in this gospel, that Jesus is under that strain, and he cries out to the Father, and he asks him for plan B, C, D, E, F, G, any, a way out, because he has a inclination. I don't think he has any kind of perfect idea, but he has an inclination of what's coming down the pipe, and it's going to be awful. And he's fully God, as people say, but he's fully human, and he couldn't get any more human than right there. Ironically, that scene in my own life was a scene that was transformative for me in my spiritual journey. Some people would even use the term, that was my conversion moment. It was at a point of deep desperation in my own life, and I wasn't going to church. I wasn't, you know, a holy roller. I didn't go to church at all up to this point. But my life was in a bad place, a really bad place. And my sister was in a horrible automobile accident. And I went into this little chapel adjacent to the ER. And I went in there to pray for my sister because she wasn't supposed to make it. And as I went in there, all I knew about Jesus at this point, I had seen in movies. I've always been a movie fan. You know that about me. I love movies. And as a kid, I, like maybe some of you, learning about the Bible through movies, whether with the Ten Commandments, Cecil B. DeMille, you know, and Chuck, or any of the multiple Jesus movies that were there, and that's what I would watch. And as I was praying in there, in my deep desperation, confusion, fear, my parents were absolutely out of their minds, distraught. They were just getting the news that my sister was in surgery and that she was beyond, that it was a last-ditch effort. And I went in there to pray, and I was at the end of my rope. And as I began to try to talk to God and ask for his help, for whatever reason, as I was on my knees, as I was crying, as the snot was coming out of my nose, as I was bloodshot, as I was, because it was just a it was the accumulation of things in my life that now reaching its apex, and I couldn't take another breath, and I'm crying out to God that that scene from the movie of the life of Jesus came to my mind. It came into my mind like a crystal bullet hitting me in the forehead. I could just see it so clearly. Jesus, because quite frankly, you know, Jesus' movies were bitching. I mean, I loved it and I enjoyed it, raising dead and walking on water and feeding 5,000 and doing all this miraculous stuff and really cool. I mean, I loved that stuff. But that's not necessarily anything I could do or relate to. But for that moment, I all of a sudden had this connection with Jesus at the personal and human level, because there I was feeling perhaps what I understood he was feeling in that garden, as he cried out to God. And that's where I was, crying out to God. And I asked him to change the situation of my life and our lives, for my mom, my dad, my sister in surgery. And then I heard for the first time, as that movie reel replayed itself in my head, I heard the words of Jesus say, not once, not twice, but three times after each appeal to God to change the circumstances, not my will, but yours be done. Not my will, but yours be done. And I realized in the 1,001 prayers I'd ever thrown up in a given year to God, like anybody does, I'd never, ever asked for God's will to be done in my life. And it's like everything stopped. And it was just like, oh. I need to do that. And my simple prayer was, God, your will be done in my life. And at that moment, the prayer wasn't like, you got it, my sister, you got it. It was just like, God, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. Help me in that to live your will out in my life. And this is an amazing thing, and it's easily missed. Because often, at times, when you hear that passage preached, it's as if people would interpret, oh, it's God's will that Jesus gets murdered. So, God, your will be done. I'm just going to, you know, go ahead and kill me. Or we think, I hear that at funerals. Well, you know, the child that died, it must have been God's will. No. Horror, death, bombs, shelling, children being apart, flesh from the bone, that's not God's will. It's just stuff that's happening. The real petition is, in the midst of all this stuff that I want changed, and maybe it does, or I want change and maybe it doesn't, can I live out your will in and through my life? I tap, am I open, as Rob would say? Can I tap into the creative spirit and power through me that your will is done in my life in every circumstance? That's a totally different kind of prayer. In other words, the will was like, God, you know I'd love for my sister to be healed, but if she dies on the right now, what's your will? How can I take care of my mom and dad? How can I step in? How can, which is a different kind of thing. It's different than saying, God, I pray for you to feed the world, as Rob says, instead of saying, God, where am I open to being the conduit, to be the answer to my own prayer? Feed the world. Well, what do you got? Okay. God, why aren't you? Maybe he really wants to, and I'm the source of that. I'm the source of his will. Yeah. And this applies to any situation. Even the situation, do I want the shelling to stop? Yeah. So what do I do? Oh, maybe I'm going to challenge people to think about what God's will really is in the world in these situations. You can't believe the dialogues I've had with people. You can't believe some of the people have been very angry at me. You don't support Israel. You don't. What are you, an anti-Semite? Because I'm simply calling out some of the atrocities that are taking here. I'm not against Israel. I love the people. I don't really give a rip so much about the land because dirt is dirt. I care about people. And you get all these Christian Zionists, well, for Jesus to come, first they got to have reestablished this. I'm like, what? Really? You really believe that? You think all for injustice and rape and murder and killing on both sides so that somehow his redemptive plan is going to... No, dude. You obviously haven't read much about Jesus. Oh, maybe about a lot of what people say about the Bible and revelations and end times and all that crap. But you maybe ought to just focus in on Jesus if you really believe he is the incarnate Son of God. Because he has some things about how to live out the will of God in our life. Maybe you've glossed over those, missed the point. There's a certain will that God has that's expressed most magnificently through Jesus into our life and how that will is to be lived out in our life, no matter what. So the prayer thing, yeah. Be raw, be honest, be truthful, be mad, be whatever, but be engaged. I think about that year, that 6 month span between the death sentence and Brett's demise. When they said he'd have about 6 months maximum, and we reached that, the cancer was blossoming back into his brain, and that's pretty much it. And I think about that 6 month period where I refused to pray for him. You know what the funny thing is? Minute to minute, hour to hour, day to day, week to week, month to month, during those 6 months, I was probably more engaged with God, which is really what prayer is, than any. My determination not to pray for him meant I was pissed off at God, and we were in it. Daily, minute to minute, we were in it. That's praying without ceasing. So yeah, listen, if you think prayer time is just about, okay, of things that I need done or I want changed in the world or whatever, and I'm going to spend an hour and I'm going to do that. Yeah, you can do that, and I'm not saying don't. But I'd rather be engaged with God minute to minute and going, what the hell is that? What are you doing now? Are you kidding me? Okay, God, let's do this. Boo. Really? Or conversely, I don't got much faith, but Wow. Something moved. Something shifted. Ooh. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Man, something's happening here. Be open. Be engaged. Be raw. Be truthful. And ask God's will to be done in you and through you. That's really what prayer is, whether the prayer is answered the way we want, whether the child lives or dies, whether the promotion comes or doesn't, whether the mortgage, you know, is taken care of or not, that all we can ask is that God be with me. I've got you in the game with me. Be open, be honest, be real, be engaged, and ask what his will is in this situation. In me and through me. And don't his will is, oh, God wanted the kid to die. No. The question is, what is your will, God, in the death of this child? What can we do out of this horrific circumstance? What can we do to bring some light, love, change, hope in the world? That, to me, is what prayer is really all about. It may not so much change things in the world as it just changes me. And when it changes me, things change in the world. out of time. So, on that note, we're going to close in a word of prayer. Chris, you going to come up, tinkle a little bit? But let's not leave this thinking that this is really prayer. It's when we close our eyes and bow our heads and assume the posture, and there's nothing wrong with prayer posture. I have that in my life. But most of the time when I'm praying, I'm behind the car and I'm gripping the... That's happening all the time. So let's take a moment.